Hello, it is May 27th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 5.7 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. Special midweek podcast. I told you we're going to do this from time to time. Hope you're enjoying the baseball podcast, but I'm very elated to have on Mark Lasante. He's a writer-editor at Grantland and an old friend of mine. I knew him first, like many people knew him first, as the creator and genius behind Defamer. Defamer now is another of Gawker's excellent muckraking sites, but at least a subsect within Gawker. I guess everything is a subsect within Gawker at this point. But Defamer, I knew Defamer as the funniest damn site I'd ever read in my life. I literally, I based my goal when I started Deadspin almost 10 years ago now was to just be Mark Lasante for sports. Now Mark Lasante is Mark Lasante for sports, and I have no idea what the hell I am. Anyway, Mark Lasante is one of the funniest people in the world. You might know him best as the guy that writes the Mad Men Power Rankings, which is what we're here for Grantland, which is what we're here to discuss tonight. We're going to discuss the end of Mad Men. Of course, we were going to do this podcast a couple of weeks ago, previewing the final episode of Mad Men. And then, as I mentioned last week, something happened to Grantland that messed up their schedule. I don't remember what it was. I just remember it was unexpected, and they didn't know it was coming, and it was somewhat, I don't know, it had something to do with the office environment there. Who can remember? It was so long ago. But so we had to postpone, but I'm very delighted to have Mark Lasante talking about Mad Men and Mad Men Power Rankings and probably his Yankees a little bit and maybe even the Entourage movie. This is Mark Lasante, one of my absolute favorite people. We're actually a co-worker of mine. We worked at Yahoo along with Tim Grierson, who does the movie reviews with me at Deadspin. Mark is one of my favorite people in the world, and he is here to talk to me now. All right, first off, Mr. Lasante, I have to mention something to you related to my life and yours. First off, hello. I feel like I should acknowledge
you. Hi.
Here. Hey,
hello.
How's it going, man? So you, I believe it was about 5 years ago at this time, maybe 5 years and a week, I was at my bachelor party hosted by AJ DeLorio.
I know where this is going.
And, and I was literally in the hotel preparing to get ready. And I checked the internet machine just to get my last glimpse of what the world was like before I went into whatever Hellmouth that DeLorio had waiting for me. And you, for Movie Line, were live tweeting the first human centipede movie.
It was live blogging.
Live blogging. Sorry,
these were more innocent times.
Yes, that's correct. Sorry, you're
yes.
right. You're right.
It was not via Twitter. This was a strictly opt-in kind of experience.
Yes, I was Cover It Live, maybe even before Cover It Live. It was just like an old Movie Line thing. Well, yeah. About a half hour before, just to complete the circle, about a half hour before we started this podcast. Yeah, so to speak, yes. I actually did complete the final sequence. I watched the final human centipede movie. I felt obliged after watching the first one and then again watching the second one because I don't actually hate the first one. And the second and third are there's like it's the one of the most horrible series of images I've ever seen in my life.
I hope this isn't a letdown to you, but I never saw the second one.
I feel like I don't even know who you are anymore.
Yeah, and I haven't seen the third one yet, so I can't even dream of seeing the third one without going back to see.
Of course,
the
you'll be
one.
Totally lost. You'll be yeah. completely lost. But so I always wanted to thank you because like that is I think because it was Cover It Live, whoever it was, I don't think I can even find it anymore. And it's also Movie Line or whatever weird stuff.
Movie Line's archives are pretty hard to find.
Yeah. So I actually find our Yahoo archives easier to find than Movie Line's, which is really
amazing. Says everything.
It really does. So so thank you for helping me complete the centipede by.
I understand the third one takes place in some kind of prison.
And it has Eric Roberts and Tiny Lester.
Oh, wow.
I was actually more sad for Tiny Lester. Because, like, Eric Roberts at least shows up, but you're like, okay, it's Eric Roberts. And he gets, like, an Eric Roberts scene. He collects his check. He goes.
You ever want to be really in awe of a human being's output, look at Eric Roberts' IMDb page, because I think it's about 200 entries long. I'm not kidding. And, like, I think I had an occasion to count it up in the last year or so, and I think he had something like 50 entries for like 2014 alone. It was insane.
Yeah, the fact that he's in this, and but that was the thing. Goes like whatever. Like Eric Roberts gets his scene where he chooses the scenery and then he leaves. Tiny Lester is literally one of the inmates, and it's never commented upon that this is Tiny Lester, or like he's one of the three charismatic, I guess, inmates. But that's it. And there's never a moment where like, hey, that's Tiny Lister, and he still looks great. He still looks fantastic. I'll give him that. But Anyway, we'll move on from that, thankfully. So thanks for coming on. We're here to talk about the Madman Power Rankings. One of my favorite things about the Madman Power Rankings, we're talking about the Madman Power Rankings and then talk about Madman. One of my favorite things about the Power Rankings, it is like all of my favorite things started that you did just for fun. All of my favorite things start for fun. You just started. Did you start it before the Tumblr, or was it just on the Tumblr originally?
Look, I'm not going to deny that it was started for fun, but they were started for Movie Line.
Oh, okay.
Season three, I think. Right. And then after that, I did them on the Tumblr when we were at Yahoo, because obviously those were not going to be a piece of content that we could deliver to that particular audience at that particular time. I kept them going purely out of love and not commerce.
Okay.
And then it came full circle again to commerce.
Yeah, to the loads of startup cash that you received from the Madman Power Rankings. So did you find them? One of the things I was always impressed about them. You seem to generally keep up the energy level. And I'm sure it was difficult, particularly with the finger bang threat level. I figured that was probably the most difficult thing to keep up the energy level. Or maybe it doesn't. Maybe you wrote that and you're like, oh crap, now I gotta write about the rest of the episode. But it seems to me that, like, generally speaking, this is maybe another advantage of this being on AMC and not on CBS, where they've got like 26 of these to crank of CSIs, finger bang threat level CSI to crank out. But I always, was it as much fun the whole time, or was there ever a time, like the series itself, some might argue, it flagged?
It was pretty fun the whole way through. Yeah. With the threat level in particular, you know, is completely unrecognizable from the point it started at, which was literally responding to that one scene with Bobby Barrett, and it was a paragraph that was about, oh, who might get this treatment next week, and then it eventually spun out into whatever it became, this weird noir meditation on existence and darkness by the end, with, you know, the occasional finger joke thrown in there, I guess. But I guess that's the way I kept doing it without abandoning it or going completely insane, was just to go wherever it took me in a particular week. Yeah. And just get weirder and darker.
I feel like really, if you were to just strip those out and start making like Amazon a Kindle single out of all of them, this is how 50 Shades of Grey happens. Like, it's just fanfic. Like, obviously, yours is legible, so, you know, that helps.
But I bet they would be just as incomprehensible and terrible if you took them out and presented them out of context.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's how 50 Shades of Grey happens.
And they wouldn't even have the benefit of being lucrative.
Yeah, that's true. Well, give it time.
Maybe I could get like 50 people who are really hardcore into it. So I'm going to go buy a case of beer.
Hey, listen, use this with the start. Again, with the Madman Power Rankings IPO cash. I don't think you're not in this for the money anymore. I don't even know why you're still working. So I want to talk about the best episode of Mad Men in specific. I feel like there's a lot of debate in the last week or so after it came out. My initial reaction was, oh, that was awesome, and really so fucking cynical. Like, that was one of those cynical endings I can imagine. Out of, like, in a way that I thought was very true to the series, Matt Zoller cites, I think most famously at New York Magazine, made an argument that, no, this is actually Dick Whitman and Don Draper coming together to become this person that's now at peace with himself and comfortable. I love Matt Zoller cites. He's one of my favorite television writers. I still don't quite buy that. What was your take from the last scene?
I think my initial take, which was the haze of 2 a.m. writing take the night of, was leaning towards the cynical side. I think what I wrote about it involved Don cynically taking back this new hippie knowledge to New York to sell, you know, sugar water back to the free spirits, you know, like consciously saying, aha, I know how to get these people now. But, you know, I think with a little more time to think it over and things that, you know, not that his interpretation is, you know, absolute, but it's a pretty good one. Matthew Weiner has talked about it and said the motive was a little bit more pure than that. Like, he actually did find some kind of peace and then converted it into this thing, which I guess is sort of inherently cynical if you're going to take some kind of inner peace and convert it into commerce. But I think his motives weren't as calculated as I probably thought in the immediate aftermath of it.
My general thing too, and we'll get into Peggy when we talk about like maybe not there's something that's not as true to the character, or maybe not as positive toward the character as you'd like. My general thing was too was because I still kind of fall on the cynical side, but like not, but while still understanding what Seitz and Matthew Weiner are saying, because really, in a lot of ways, like Don, you can make an argument, was always kind of this hollow man in the first place, and was always like making these occasional dodges at, no, I'm this well-rounded human being who's being good for the world, but really, the only thing he was ever really good at, and I was selling it in the first place. And this brings me, and I'm curious how you feel about this as a father now, as a fellow producer of Offspring, because something not to get too serious too serious on here, but like that scene where he's talking to Betty. And it basically kind of dawns on, like, she makes it clear to him, and it dawns on him that, like, oh, actually, things will be a lot easier if you're just not around because everyone's used to you not being not around. Like, that totally killed me. I'm like, wow, this is what happens if I screw this up. Like, if I
Yeah,
totally
he's
screw up
kind
on
of
it.
in that way, he's kind of a worst case scenario, isn't he? It's
Yeah.
he's living his life and in one way being a huge success, and another way being a gigantic failure to the point where, the mother of his children is like, "Eh, yeah, I'm dying, but don't come back." You'll read the clipping in the paper
Yeah,
about the funeral
it'll
and
be
don't mess
easier.
up the kids, like it'd be better if they're here with their uncle than
Right.
living with their father.
Right.
And that really, it hit him too, obviously, because he had his little moment of existential angst underneath the payphone there, and drove him into the arms of the invisible refrigerator man for his epiphany
Yes.
himself. So, yeah,
Yeah, I don't
as a father, it's probably the worst thing that could happen to you in
know. Yeah.
the circumstances
That's
like
screwing
that.
up. That's screwing up. I really
Yeah,
feel like
and
that is.
ultimately led him back in
Yeah,
some
right.
way.
Yes. To the peaceful
Because
home.
even all the way through, I mean, you could say he wasn't a good father, and he wasn't in the ways that we would think about it now, for sure.
I think he always
But
thought of
he
himself.
was willing to drop everything and go back.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't a complete monster who was like, okay, like oh,
Good
she's
luck with
dying, I don't care. Back to the
that.
Bonneville Salt Flats to go race with Zeke and Luke.
Right. So yeah, and so
On the
okay.
baseline, he was willing to go back to help
Yeah.
with his dying wife. So at least he had
Theoretically.
that going.
Yeah, theoretically speaking. And that brings us to Peggy. And I will say that, I feel like you, I've grown a little bit warmer to the Don, though I'm still thinking it's cynical, growing warmer to the Don in the ending a little bit. I find myself. And I know we live in a, this was the ongoing thing throughout Mad Men's run was how much fan service he was willing, how much he was going to be David Chase and how much he was not going to be, I guess, Vince Gilligan. It's not fair to call Vince Gilligan Mr. Fan Service, but you know what I mean, like listening to the audience a little bit more. And it feels like he didn't do it in any way. He was David Chase in every way except for Peggy, which is weird because that's not actually what I wanted for Peggy. If there's one time where it feels like, okay, her this is her whole thing. This is her work is her whole life. I was a little disappointed to see like, hey, she found love.
Yeah, I mean, I had been pushing for that in the end, but then I kind of questioned
Yeah.
my thinking about that at the very end
I
also.
wanted them
It
to
was
be
like 2 weeks
together.
from the end, it was like, oh man, put them together, because that's what everybody wants. There was
Yeah.
the gravitational pull that they were obviously resisting. And then, it's kind of be careful what you wish for at the end. And the way they gave it that, syrupy Nora Ephron, I'm on the
Right.
phone next door. Oh, I'm in the doorway.
Whoa.
I love you. I love you. It was really well acted, and it was in the moment, like kind of like, oh, isn't that nice? But also feels a little bit like feels a little undermining of the whole character in some ways. But that's the fan service thing. It's there were a lot of bows tied on things, or at least for the purposes of that last episode. There's the point made that you don't know what their lives are as this show continues on. Like the next day, who knows what happens to these people? But as far as that's the last thing you got of each of these people, there were a lot of bows on things where you wondered if he was going to steer in the David Chase direction, having been, studied at the right hand of the master, and gone the other way. But he chose, I think, to, and it kind of surprised me that he chose to go that
Yeah.
way with so many of the stories, where like he gave you a definitive something to go out on with each of them, rather than just, life goes on kind of thing. There were big moments for all of them. It wasn't just tomorrow is another day.
Yeah, and it seemed like so much of the last season, the thing that people were complaining about, or the second half of the last season, was going toward the direction that I also thought they were going to do, where it's like, and then they shut the door and they go to work the next day, and that's what happens, and that's what happens in life, and goodbye. Because that seemed like the whole premise of the show, in a lot of ways, was there are no big epiphanies. And you think you have a big epiphany, and then you go back to who you are, and then you have your life, you go on and on and on and on. And so to see that, and that brings me back to my general question, because I, you know, I have this argument with Grierson all the time. Who's better, Rick Ankiel or David Freese? But other arguments that we have are you know, the idea, Tim is very much like, he is of the David Chase mold. He doesn't believe the audience should exist. He does not like this on-demand society. He does not like this. He doesn't like the nightmare of Dan Harmon writing fan complaints into his script on the fly. That's a nightmare to Grierson. And I tend to probably go a little bit farther in that direction myself, within reason. I tend to find it a little bit less charming when people personally flip off the audience if they're not David Chase. Like, you have to be David Chase to kind of pull that off. Where do you fall on that? Do you like this kind of new television world where we can I even feel like the last episode of Breaking Bad had a little bit of that, where I feel like if you ended two episodes before, that might have been the logical endpoint, but we needed this wrap-up thing because I think fans would have been upset. In a post, not so much post-Sopranos, but I guess post-Lost last episode, it feels like everyone wants to make everyone happy with that episode, and I almost feel like that takes some of the fun out of it.
You know, I mean, if we're just talking about which one I think was a better ending, I'll take the Sopranos ending over this ending any day of the week. Right. It feels a little more pure in the artistic intent. If, you know, that's the way he was going to go with it, he's like, he's going to cut to black and he's going to let everybody stand there scratching their heads, and he's not going to give you any answers, and you're going to spend 10 years arguing over it. You know, Weiner went a different way with it, which is fine. And he also had said, you know, this was interesting, I had listened to a long podcast he did, I think it was on Nerdist, where he talked about, you know, how he hoped, and this was before the finale, this was probably a good 2 or 3 weeks before the finale, he hoped that, you know, the last 5 minutes of his show wouldn't invalidate the previous 92 episodes, you know, no matter what he did. He's like, you should still enjoy the show no matter how we decide to wrap it up, whether you like it or not. You know, and then he immediately invoked Lost and the storm after that, and, you know, the way that people continue to take giant dumps on that whenever they talk about endings that didn't work. You know, I'm in the school of thoughts, like, whatever the guy who's making the show wants to do, like, that's what we get. And we move on. You know, it's fun to argue about, but, you know, I'm not like, he should have done it this way, should have done it that way, you know?
Yeah, no,
they're going to give us what they're going to give us, and we're going to take it, you know? It's like they're sending some kind of artistic statement one way or the other. And if they want to make a little bit of a neater one, you know, one that's a little bit more accessible or feels a little more, you know, finite, then cool. You know, if they want to do something where, you know, like someone like Vince Gilligan was so meticulous about the way he plotted things.
Right.
And Weiner has part of that in him too, but, you know, it wasn't as much of a plot-driven show. But with Gilligan, you knew that everything was eventually going to pay off.
Right.
You know, there wasn't, you know, if they're the wristwatch on top of the payphone, you know, like that meant something. There wasn't like a wasted shot or a wasted thing. Mad Men had a lot of that too, but it didn't need it on a plot level to come back at the end, because, you know, it had always been more of a show that was about emotion and atmosphere. You know, the plot was important, but it wasn't plot driven.
So it's been a week of goodbyes. I've had to say goodbye to Mad Men. I've had to say goodbye to Letterman. I've had to say goodbye to the Mad Men Power Rankings. And I actually sat at my computer and just said goodbye to them when I finished the last one. It was probably strange, but
you're a very sentimental person.
I am.
Need to say goodbye to a recap of a TV show along with the TV show.
Like, to be fair, I say goodbye. Like, every web page I get to when I'm finished with it, I do say goodbye. Like, even like updating my fantasy team, I'm like, I have to say goodbye to the previous incarnation. I am. I'm emotional about the web. So. But I'm curious, what is the next thing? Because Letterman finale made me very emotional. I'm the person that actually still tries to make sure to watch Letterman online the next day, splice throughout my day, and have been doing that for the last 10 or 15 years. Like, I no longer stay up until 11:30 to watch it, but I've always tried to make sure I knew what happened on Letterman the day before. So.
Yeah, I've been checking in. You know, I don't watch him every night anymore. Didn't watch him every night anymore, but I'd say at least a couple times a week. Yeah. You know, even if it was the next day, always checking in with it. Always wanted to know what was going on with it. I definitely would watch it more than, the other network shows.
Yeah.
By a lot. I loved Letterman. That was pretty emotional. You know, that's 33 years. I remember watching the NBC shows was just all the montages of that was incredible. You know, it's like so many things you'd forgotten and, you know, that'd been going on since what? I was like 7 or 8 or something. Right. You know, it's like I have like very few memories that didn't include that somewhere.
This is my conscience. Yeah, this is in fact
something,
my consciousness.
You know, you never expect that to last, you know, basically through your entire life. Right. Up to a certain point, then it goes away. It's sad. You know, it's like, well, he's ready to be gone. And I think, you know, the next one's going to be Jon Stewart.
Yeah,
I'm a big late night TV watcher. So, you know, like Stewart has been a part of my nightly routine for as long as it's been on, you know? So that's going to be just as hard, if not harder.
I'm curious, are there any other, what other shows are there? Because it feels like Mad Men was like a big build up to one. I'm behind on like The Americans, so some people are very loyal, loyalists to The Americans. But what are the show, like, what are the shows now that are going to give us that big, like, what's that, what is not just popular enough, but like that kind of build up to, and here is the end thing that are on right now?
I mean, Game of Thrones will be that way.
But don't they have to, like, because
they have a while long. You mean something that's, like, imminently coming to an end?
No,
America's
going
to be on a couple more years.
No, I think, it doesn't have to be imminent. But I feel like, because I don't watch Game of Thrones, and I have not read the books. So
oh, wow.
I understand that they diverge at some point, right?
Yeah, this season has been the point of departure.
Okay, so
for the most part. So not totally, but in significant ways, apparently. I haven't read the books either, but I edit a lot of Game of Thrones material.
Right, yes.
Including one that is dedicated to explaining to us non-book-reading dummies what the difference is between the show and the 15,000 pages of book.
So,
but I think, I mean, ultimately, the end of that show will be a gigantic deal. I mean, what's going to occupy that same place in our consciousness, you mean?
Yeah, just say, like, Mad Men what are the other ones? It doesn't have to be the same place, but seriously, what are the shows on right now that are going to give us Americans, Game of Thrones? They're going to give us that big emotional. Also, just with Parks and Recreation too. Like, I'm really happy.
Yeah, yeah. Parks.
There's really like a lot of them going through here. But like, what ones are there? Like, you know, I may just be asking this to make sure I can get caught up on these things. But
I personally love The Americans. That's a good one that you brought up, and Thrones has been one that I've completely loved, and I've gotten to watch in a kind of different way than I've gotten to watch Mad Men. In that I haven't had to, you know, right, stay up all night writing about it right, for 7 seasons or whatever I've been doing. So, you know, it's like that's always been – Thrones has a special place because I would always watch it right before watching Mad Men.
Right, right.
And it was kind of the end of my weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
And then into Mad Men was like, here we go. You know, you're going to watch the show. You're going to love it. And then you're going to sit down at the computer and pound it out for a few hours, you know. Yeah, but what else right now? Yeah. I mean, stuff's coming back. I mean – you can't like count like a True Detective or something. Those are, you know, limited series.
Yeah, and yeah, I don't know. It feels like definitely.
I mean, the big ones. Yeah, it's been when you lose Breaking Bad and then Mad Men and.
Do you like Better Call Saul?
I do.
Yeah,
I like it a lot.
I do too. I like it. I like it in its own like. I love that it's a very different thing, but it's satisfying in a very similar way.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think it's not the same show, but it has so many of the elements of the other show that remind you of it in a really kind of satisfying way.
Yeah, and Bob
it's a different kind of storytelling, but similar, but also still similar. And, you know, it comes from all the same DNA, and you still have that Vince Gilligan, you know, thumbprint all over it.
My hope, the only thing I hope is, like, I now hope that Vince Gilligan has just decided that he's just going to make everything the rest of his life all in this Albuquerque universe. Like, I think it'd be awesome. Like, have a flash forward. Like, the end of this show is a flash forward where he runs into someone at the Cinnabon, and we follow their story for the next 3 years.
What's going to happen when we find out he's been taking kickbacks from the Albuquerque Chamber of Commerce?
The whole time? Yeah, well.
Yeah. Will anyone care? Will we just shrug it off? Will we just say that's just the way the world works?
Hey, listen, I feel like that is very similar to the NFL taking money from the military. I feel like it's the exact same principle in every possible way, a one-to-one relationship. Two more last things on Mad Men I want to get to. I want to know, I'm starting to worry I'm the only person in the world that actually owns a copy of the Sterling's Gold little
book. I don't even.
I didn't know if
I've written many passages from that book, and I don't have a copy.
I do have a copy. I bought it as like a semi-gag gift for my wife, and then we just read it, and now it's...
How is it? I heard it's very short.
It's very short. It's very short. It's very short.
I should own that.
Yeah,
it's kind of a crime that I don't. I'm gonna have to get on eBay right after this.
I assume it's
Amazon
like,
and see what's left.
I assume the cost of it for from Amazon used right now is just simply shipping. I'm sure it's one of those like penny and shipping. Please take this off your hand.
Maybe somebody from AMC's got a crate of them laying around and just wants to send one to the office for me.
Okay, that should have happened already. The problem is they'll send you like two boxes. So
That'd be okay. I'll hand them out.
Yeah, exactly. It's stocking stuffers. All right, then the last thing I want to talk to you about Mad Men, I loved I was very fond. I thought that the kind of a brilliant way to kind of close your thing out was to do the goodbyes that were cut for time from there. And, and doing all of the, because of course, there it was, like any great show, it's populated with, it's funny, the analogy I always use for this is it's the show Springfield. It's the population.
I forgot one. This just occurred to me the other day, was there was one that I had typed in my notes and then didn't type into the actual thing because I just forgot.
Oh,
and
give
it
me
was,
an exclusive. Give me an exclusive.
This is a DVD extra. This is the saddest DVD extra of a blog post, missing sentences. It was going to be Bud Campbell, Pete Campbell's brother, dying in a plane crash on his way to visit them in Topeka on the Learjet just to bring it all their family of course. Transportation tragedies full circle.
I think the only way that could be improved is if he's actually visiting his mistress. In Kansas somewhere.
Yeah,
or one of his many mistresses. Yeah, one of his many mistresses.
Yeah, I mean, they showed us Bud for some reason, right? You have to assume. The mother died on the cruise ship, right? The father died in the American Airlines crash in, what was it, like season two?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, which was something that I always thought was a really hilarious, dark joke that they gave Pete the Learjet account at the end. You know, like, and I didn't see that many people remarking on it.
Yeah.
Because it's impossible to keep track of all those backstories, honestly. Like, I forgot so much about that show.
And Bud, I do love the idea. I hope to someday to have the unwitting and incorrect self-confidence of Bud Campbell to be like, hey, I mean, come on, she sees how people look at me. Come on.
He's irresistible to women. It would be wrong to deny them his gift.
We were all thinking it. But I was curious, do you have a minor character that, I'll give you mine, a minor character that, at times maybe not minor, but the one character that I still like that makes me smile every time I think about him. And part of this, frankly, is probably one of the great things about the Power Rankings is you kind of crystallize certain viewpoints of people in my mind. It's definitely Bob Benson. And your description of Bob Benson cheerfully, I'll go fuck myself now, thanks, bye, is literally one of the funniest Bob Benson things. Because to me, that was before like we got the darker Bob Benson, that we learned he was a con man and so on. But like Bob Benson is the character to this day. I will watch. What's the guy's name?
James Wolk. Right?
James Wolk. Yeah. I'm about to say Josh Wolk, but we know him in a different context. Yes, but
of the this side of the television world,
right? On the other side, on the watching the screen rather than inside the screen, but every time I see that actor, even, and he was in that really terrible Robin Williams show, and I think
he was in that good Fox show that lasted two episodes,
right.
Lone Star, really good, right?
And so I feel like I will watch him in anything from now on just because I'm so fond of Bob Benson.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the reason he disappeared from the show and he got that storyline was he went to the Robin Williams show,
yeah,
and they had to get him out of there, you know, kind of like. I mean, I'd say to me, unsatisfying way, because I wanted to see him go all the way through.
Yeah.
But we did get him at the very beginning of the season, right? Or at least the mention of him at the beginning of season 7?
I think there's a mention.
Yeah, there was a mention about Bob in Detroit or something, I think, in like the first episode of the last half season. You know, I wanted him to stay around. I mean, he's definitely my favorite secondary character by a mile.
All right, so we'll wrap up there. I'm going to ask you about two more things before I make you do trivia, which I know you, like everyone else, is looking forward to greatly. First off, I have to talk to you about, because you are currently in last place in my fantasy baseball league.
Yeah, I am. That team is a disaster.
With a bullet. You are last place.
I'm not even sure I've won a single week yet. It's been terrible.
You're having trouble, but that's okay.
Look, I think I have solid roster construction, and I've picked a lot of guys you know, who have started slowly. I mean, yeah. I lost my first round pick for a month at Carlos Gomez. Mm-hmm. My second round pick was Robbie Cano, who we all know is hitting about 235 right now.
Yes.
So it's not going great for me.
That's okay. I'm not here to hurt
my other fantasy team is in second place.
I prefer to assume that you don't have another fantasy team. But
nope. There's another one, and in that one I'm doing pretty well. Just so I don't sound completely incompetent at fantasy baseball.
No, you've been fine in my league in the past. It's not like you've always.
I finished first.
You've done.
I didn't win the tournament, but I finished regular exactly. season first, which I consider the real victory. After that, it's just a crapshoot.
Of course, your shit don't work.
Yeah,
in the playoffs.
We all know the playoffs is just a coin flip.
Yeah, your fantasy shit doesn't work.
I think it was Grierson.
Yeah,
that took me down.
I won my league. Anyway, but I want to talk to you about the Yankees. As I was so excited when we were originally going to do this podcast because the Yankees are doing so great. Congratulations! I'm so happy for you. And then everything has completely fallen apart. Do you think this is a? But it still feels like the division is weak enough that that they can still kind of stumble into one of those 83-84 Cardinals in 2006 division wins.
Yeah, it was considerate of the rest of the division to take a stretch where the Yankees lost 10 of 11 and still only fell from first to second place a game out. So, you know, that the AL East is a gigantic mess. I mean, Tampa Bay's in first. What world is this?
Is this a likable Yankees
team? Steven Souza Jr.'s world. That's what world it is.
Right. Is this a likable Yankee team? I'm always kind of curious. I talked to my friend Joe D'Alessio about this a lot, too, of which Yankees teams are likable to their fans. Forget what the rest of us think.
I'll tell you what.
Which ones are likable to their fans?
This is an answer that's slightly complicated in that it's more likable than last year. But that is going from a baseline of zero likability.
Right.
Last year's team was a disaster and no fun to watch. And at least we got the beginning of a season this year where they're tantalizing us with, you know, contention and some promise and at least some players and the whole A-Rod fiasco, which is just great on all levels. Just from him coming back and then being the best hitter for the first 2 months is a storybook ending
and being
that
PR
everybody
savvy,
wanted.
And being weirdly PR savvy, this is one of my favorite things about A-Rod this year.
He hasn't said a wrong thing.
He's been done everything right. It's
so
really
far,
kind of amazing.
He's bizarro A-Rod has come back through the wardrobe from his suspension and is doing everything correctly. He's even staying out of the whole pay me my home run money mess. He's like, you know, I'm just going to play the game. Yeah. But they're, you know, like I find things to like about this team, like, you know, Pineda and hopefully Tanaka when he comes back before his elbow explodes again for good. And Ellsbury's playing great and Brett Gardner's playing well. And, you know, there are things to like. And then there are the things not to like Carlos Beltran's ghost haunting right field. Yes. Although he's been okay for the last, he's starting to hit a little bit.
When he gets hot,
the Stephen Drew experiment part two.
Yes, yes.
Terrible. And every time he's playing, you know, it's just like, just cut the guy.
Yeah.
And, you want that. You don't want somebody to lose $5 million, but, well, he'd get it anyway.
Yeah, he'd get it anyway.
So there's no reason. Why am I even being sentimental about it? Just
that is kind of a weird whatever. Thing. The Yankees are always in that spot where, like, I mean, A-Rod, I think, is the ultimate proof that they just will never cut a guy if they owe him if they owe him a bunch of money, even if he's absolutely, like, because that's the thing is, like, even the Yankees with all the money, they wouldn't do it with A-Rod, but even with all the money, it still feels like they wouldn't cut a guy with $5 million, even if he was.
They'll cut. No, I think at that level they will.
Yeah.
I think he's got probably till the All-Star break, and if he continues to hit 140.
He homered yesterday. And,
yeah, he did in the 14-1 game. Yes. Right. That's been the kind of his.
Picking your
he's
spots.
He's had one big
picking
hit this season.
Spots.
I won't even count that one because they were already up 11. But no, 8 at that point. I think he was runs 9, 10, and 11 on that home run. He had the grand slam in Baltimore, and that was his one moment of the season of any meaning. He's been awful all around it. I mean, he just looks done.
One of my favorite things about you as a Yankee fan, Mark, talking about the Yankees all these years, I always feel like you make me sympathetic to the Yankees because you're weirdly, you're a Mets-like fatalist when it comes to the Yankees. Like every time I talk to you about the Yankees, I come away thinking
I won't accept any kind of descriptor that involves Mets.
Okay, take away the Mets.
Fatalist, okay.
Yes, you're a fatalist about
Mets-like. Like, we're not gonna that stand.
Fine. But you get what I'm saying. The idea, like I talk to you about the Yankees, and I come away going, man, they're having a tough time with you. I hope that gets pulled out for them. And then I stop myself, and I'm like, oh, wait.
It's the Yankees. Let them burn.
Right. Of course, I can't say this anymore because everybody hates the Cardinals more than they hate the Yankees now. So
it's true.
I'm just accepting that. Hey, listen.
They're nearly as hated, but you can't say as hated.
Fred Bird lives matter. Fred Bird lives matter. Okay, last thing I want to talk about with you before we get into this. I've been the only thing I would be more as excited, probably equally excited, for you to write about, and I feel like the best transition for you out of the end of this Mad Men world, back into your life as Mad Men goes away, here is Entourage, as your methadone to your heroin. For you, the things that I have loved Mark Lasanti writing about over the last 10 to 12 years. Entourage and Ari Gold and the whole business. I am excited. You've been writing about it for Grantland. I've been very excited to see it. How are you feeling? Are you going to go? Will you see it early? Have you got your arms around Entourage, 4.0, whatever Entourage number reboot thing we're on now?
I will be seeing it early.
Okay.
It's my responsibility as a journalist or whatever journalism is.
If called, you will, sir.
The place I occupy in the Entourage right. firmament.
Right.
The week 4 installment of Countdown to the Entourage movie will be appearing on Grantland tomorrow on Wednesday. Or today, depending on what day you're running
today.
This.
Yes. Probably. Oh, this is running next month.
June 3rd. So. June 3rd in theaters.
Yes.
I've been ingesting a lot of Entourage adjacent media. You should be excited to learn that I discovered Jerry Ferrara's podcast called Bad for Business.
Oh.
And I've listened to about an hour and a half of Turtle E and series creator Doug Ellen pimping the movie at podcast length, getting into deep Entourage trivia.
You know,
I'm doing my due diligence all around the promotion of this thing and trying to ingest every last word and video clip I can find. And there's been a lot.
Well,
the boys are doing a lot of very strong promotional work around this thing.
I mean, they're back in town. What else are they going to do?
They're back. They're back and they all have points.
Yeah.
They need to see this thing do well.
This is all that's left.
That's how they got this made. That's how they're back for another one.
Well, suddenly my horror of seeing the final Human Centipede feels lessened after I know that you've actually been ingesting every bit of Entourage-related podcast media.
So. You can just consider the Entourage movie Human Centipede 4, final sequence extended.
Feed him! Feed him! All right, Dieter Laser, I hope has a role in the Entourage movie. All right, Mark, thank you for coming on. I think we'll pause and end, and then we'll because the trivia is on a separate podcast. But thank you for doing this. I'm delighted to have you. If I'd have known I could get you on the talk about the Mad Men Power Rankings, I would have done this years ago.
I'm a hard get.
Yeah, I know.
And now it's gone forever.
Listen, also, I'm glad I did a preview of the final episode of Breaking Bad with Grierson on this podcast, and it was fun, but it also felt like weirdly urgent. Like we had to like capture every possible thing, and of course we were going to do this podcast before the final episode, and then I don't remember what happened, but we had to change it and postpone it a little bit.
Schedules get crazy.
And they do, and so I have to say that I found this more relaxed and more fun than if we'd have been trying to cover every angle and what's going to happen with this. This has been more of a delightful warm look back at the series rather than a what's going to happen.
What do you think is going to happen to Richard Berghoff? That was Joan's boyfriend.
I know. I forgot the Berghoff. I'm assuming.
Played by Bruce Greenwood.
I know, who's awesome.
One of Canada's finest character actors. Now America's.
Canada's finest Kennedys. Wow, one of Canada's. Yeah. I assume this being 1971, he dies within like an hour of leaving that apartment. Like it's amazing.
Well, he did just discover cocaine at a relatively advanced age, so he was really playing with with white fire.
I like that idea too. The notion of, hey, I'm at the age I got to try everything once. Wait, no.
How do we do this? How do we do this stuff?
No. See, that's
you just put it in your fingernail and then we become producers.
Yeah, that's the thing about aging, man, is this, that's when you don't just try everything once. The only way you get to continue to age is by not just trying everything once. All right, Mark. Thank you for coming on. We'll do trivia, but this has been a delight. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me. Very fun.
All right. Thank you to Mark Lisanti. You can follow him on Twitter at Mark Lisanti, MarkLisanti. This is the Willie's Experience podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We will be back Thursday or Friday with Lisanti's trivia that we will be recording now. Be safe out there.